Nick.
Hello, English Nick.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Are you actually English?
I am, mate. And I tell you what, we crossed paths back in 2005 when you were here playing the Music Midtown Festival. And at the time I was working for a station, one of the morning show guys was from Atlanta, huge Def Leppard fan, huge 80s fan. He thought he was going to introduce you guys that day. And when you guys got into town, I guess you had a British tour manager?
We do still have Welsh, actually, but yes.
Yeah, and he was like, he spoke to my boss. He's like, here you got a British guy who works for the radio station. We want him to introduce the band tonight. And it just so happened, you had 70,000 plus people in front of the stage that night.
That always helps.
You know, another 70,000 people I want to talk about. Because I grew up in England. I moved here in 96. I want to go back a little bit, if I may, to the beginning of my musical history, because you guys have a lot to do with that. 1983, first album I ever bought on cassette from a little record shop in Salisbury, England, called Rod's Records, was an album called Pyromania.
Right.
Fast forward to a date. This is August 16th, 1986.
Okay, that would be Donington, the Monsters of Rock. Rick's first proper gig after his accident, other than the weird... We did some warm-up shows in Ireland.
Yeah.
But that was like, you know, they were so under the radar. There was like no people at them, hardly. Well, we didn't want anybody there. But,
right.
A couple of hundred. We played ice skating rinks and stuff like that. It was just to test him out. It was good, great fun. But that was like, yeah, there was 75,000 people there. It was incredible.
Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne was headlining. Motorhead were on the bill that day. And
Scorpions were on the bill. There's an English joke band called Bad News were on that day as well, which is... hilarious.
Yeah, Bad News. A lot of our American listeners here, they may know Bad News, the Bad News guys, from a show called The Young Ones.
That's right. They were Spinal Tap before Spinal Tap, actually.
I think so, yeah. Well, what did you guys think of Bad News as far as, you know, all these serious bands playing and then they stick that on the bill?
Well, the thing is, they were only on the bill because they were filming filming one of the movies.
Yeah.
And so they needed them on stage in front of an audience. So they were, I mean, they did actually play, but they weren't booked as a band. They kind of asked, could they be on, because we want to film ourselves in front of all these, you know, these fans. So,
yeah, I remember people used to throw stuff at the stage at Donington, but so much crap got thrown at Bad News that afternoon.
Well, that's because they asked them to. They said, throw stuff at us, make it look real, you know. The problem was that they didn't stop when Motorhead went on.
No, Lemmy got a bit PO'd, didn't he, that day?
Yeah, and I don't blame him. It was great, because he stopped the set and he said, I've been doing this too long to put up with that kind of crap. And it was handy because by the time we went on, they'd stopped throwing stuff.
At one point, a firework was like aimed at Lemmy for some reason.
Ah, well, you know, I mean, they probably weren't aiming at Lemmy, they were just aiming at the stage. But,
yeah.
You know, I've seen all sorts of stuff end up on, I mean, chickens, pig's heads, toilet seats. I mean, you name it. It's probably been, over the last 40 years, some gigs from Woodstock onwards, there's been some weird stuff thrown on stage.
Yeah, anything you could get into a bottle was thrown on stage at Donington for sure.
Well, yeah, specifically the yellow stuff. Yeah, I remember a few of those coming up. Luckily, none of them went anywhere near us.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? When you go back, there's a website where people can post about their Donington experiences, and there's like, it looks like medieval times almost, 1986.
Probably. I mean, it was the early days. It was Monsters of Rock. It's, you know, it's now called Download.
Yeah,
it's
like...
totally changed. It's a lot more civilized these days. Yeah, I think Maiden were probably the last band to do it as Monsters of Rock. They did like 108,000 people there.
Yeah.
But then the safety issues and the health and safety people come in and spoil everything. So
yeah, I mean, there was that year, was it 1988, when the two fans got killed during the Guns N' Roses set, and they didn't have it for a year, did they?
That's correct.
And I think that was the first time they put that huge like alleyway down the middle of the crowd to help with security, so...
Yeah, and it also helped with the cables going to the mixing desk so that you didn't get your power cut off.
Right. So let's talk about it. Well, before we talk about Atlanta, I want to talk about another couple of dates on the Hysteria tour. I got to see you guys at the Bristol Hippodrome in 87, showing up not really knowing what tickets we had. And we got the balcony overlooking the stage, one of my favorite Def Leppard memories. And
wow.
Then flash forward to 1988 at Wembley Arena, I was... all the way in the back and could barely see you guys. And there weren't no video screens back in 88 either.
No, there weren't. You know, I mean, we started using video screens as recently as 2005, which is like 10 years ago.
It just makes all the difference.
And I was kind of very insistent on us using them. We had one of these, you know, kind of band meetings on the phone saying, right, you know, we were doing the production meetings for the upcoming tour, and I said, we really need to take screens out. I'd just been to a tiny little club in the UK called the Boardwalk in Sheffield, and I'd seen the sensational Alex Harvey Band.
Oh, wow.
With three screens in a building that small, and I was just absolutely blown away with the content and the bravado of doing it in such a small place, made for such an event, you know, and I thought, I think it's about time we started doing something like this. So, we've worked our way to it over the years. It's got better and better and better, and it's kind of built into our live show now, almost the way that, you know, the pig and the bed and the aeroplane is built into the Pink Floyd set. It's all part of what we do. We truly believe that, you know, we've got songs good enough to just play in front of a black cloth. But who wants to see that when you come to see a band? You come to see a band.
Yeah. So
we put everything on, from historical films to just cameras shooting at us as we're playing, and, you know, turn the cameras on the crowd so they can see themselves. That's always a good laugh, you know, because everyone gets a cheer when they see themselves on the screen. And it just makes for a better event, I think.
Were you guys were the first band to do In the Round seriously, right?
We were one of the first to get kudos for doing it.
Yeah.
I believe Aerosmith may have done something similar a couple of years earlier, but not to that extent. And, of course, people like Sinatra were doing it years and years before us. But,
sure.
And I've also heard rumors since that Yes also played In the Round, but I can imagine a Yes gig would be a little less, enthusiastic from a movement point of view, because, you know, they're studied musicians, and especially Rick Wakeman, who'd be trapped behind 400 keyboards. He's not really going to be able to move much.
Yeah,
whereas what we did, we treated it like a boxing ring, and we used every inch of that canvas to get ourselves to four front rows, is basically what we ended up with.
Yeah.
So it was a very visual show. So I think we may have been the first people to do that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I've been a big Metallica fan over the years, and I saw those guys do it at Birmingham NEC on the Blackened Tour, and that was just... It was amazing. And I had a buddy who'd gotten both legs broken in a car wreck, so we got to have the disabled seating at Birmingham NEC, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, so. The raised close to the stage seats. You can't beat them.
Now let's talk about Atlanta. It's a Sunday, which is always great for a show at Aaron's Amphitheatre at Lakewood.
It is. Not if you're going back to work the next day.
I hear you. But yeah, it's Sunday, June 28th. Last time you were here, you came through with Kiss last year. How is it touring with Kiss?
Fantastic. I mean, we've known them on and off over the years. I met Eric when he was playing with Alice Cooper 24 years ago.
Right.
I was with Paul Stanley on many occasions. I've had a beer with him, but specifically we watched the Stones together at the Wilton Theatre in LA.
Oh wow!
About 2002, and with Gene Simmons, he's been in and out of our lives since he just burst into our dressing room at the LA Forum in '91, and you know, was raving about because we were in the round the first time. He missed us on the Hysteria Tour, I think. And I toured with Gene in the Rock and Roll All-Stars in 2011 all over South America. And that's where it all kind of came from, because we've got 17 hours between flights from Argentina to Mexico or whatever. You've got a lot of downtime to talk, you know. And the question arose, why have we never worked together, you know? And it just took until last year for all the planets to become aligned, if you like, you know, and it was great. You know, they were a lot of fun to work with.
There's members of Guns N' Roses involved in that too, right?
In the Rock and Roll All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, yeah, which has now been rechristened the Kings of Chaos.
Yep.
I'm still involved in that. I didn't do the last run to South Africa because I was busy recording, but it is it's like a football team. You've got players coming in and out.
So yeah.
The core element is Duff and Matt and Gilby, but a Slash does it occasionally. When he doesn't, Steve Stevens from Billy Idol's band does it. Dave Kushner from Velvet Revolver, Nuno Bettencourt, and singing wise, myself, Glenn Hughes, Ed Rowland from Collective Soul, Robin Zander, Miles Kennedy, who sings with Slash, and Alter Bridge. He's a phenomenal singer. So there's all sorts of different people come and go in that, but it makes for a great night.
Glenn Hughes, I saw a photograph of you and Glenn Hughes walking along the street in LA. I'm a big fan of Glenn Hughes from the Deep Purple days.
Yeah, he's a good guy, Glenn.
He seems like the nicest man on the planet to me.
Yeah, he is. He's very polite. He's very humble and down to earth when you're in a dress. I mean, whenever I'm out with the Kings of Chaos, me and him share a room.
Yeah.
We both like to warm up before we go on, you know. And
yeah.
We warm up to the same tape. So the two of us, it's hilarious. It's like the two Stooges all you hear is this la 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 coming out of the room. This is about 9 octaves higher than mine, you know, and I'm pretty high, but he's like, that guy can break glass, you know.
His new act, California Breed, that's a pretty cool little album he's got going on there.
Great record. Such a shame it all fell to pieces because Jason left before the album got released, and it's all gone kind of. All gone kind of sideways.
Yeah, who is Jason? I saw Jason Bonham posting on Facebook. He's rehearsing with somebody. What's he doing next then?
The last I heard, he was playing with Phil Collins. I don't know.
Wow.
So, no idea.
Well, interesting.
I haven't seen Jason since my little side band, The Down and Outs, opened for Paul Rogers in 2011.
Uh-huh.
And Jason was playing drums for Paul Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been around the gamut, old Jason, hasn't he?
Certainly has.
Now, where are you today? Are you in Ireland today or Los Angeles?
I'm at
today?
Home, yeah. I'm about to nip back down into the studio when we finish. Finishing touches to the new album.
And you said you're in Ireland?
I am.
Do you have a home studio there? How do you work?
Yeah, I've 30 years nearly now.
Wow.
25.
Well, and you're in Dublin, yeah?
Yep. Well, just on the outskirts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, we've recorded nearly everything from Adrenalize onwards here.
Wow.
Makes a lot of sense, really. And it's
great
for me, 35 feet from my bedroom door. So,
yeah, it's nice.
I don't have to jump in the car.
It's nice to roll out of bed with an idea and just put it down, right?
It certainly is. It really is.
That's so great. So we're thinking the fall on the new record?
Possibly late summer, early autumn, yeah. I'm really not sure at the moment because we were going to release it in time for the tour, but then things change, you know. We thought, well, there's no point in rushing it. We really don't want to rush it. It's more important that it's a good record than it's an early record,
sure.
If you like. And we've had an unprecedented amount of people sniffing around. So, because we're free agents, you know, we've financed the record ourselves.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we were just going to release it ourselves. But then a lot of people are coming around going, well, let's talk. So we have to give them at least the benefit of listening to what they've got to say, and that's just takes time, that's all.
It's worth a few free dinners, right?
Well, it could be a free dinner here or there.
Free cocktail here and there?
I would go for the cocktail any day, yeah.
Have you guys toured with Styx before?
Yes, 2007. We had, actually, Jason was involved in that as well, because we had Styx and Foreigner opening for us.
That's right.
And I remember Jason kept coming and going all summer, and they'd get a stunt drummer in for 2 or 3 weeks, and I figured out what he was doing. And he was off back to England to rehearse with Zeppelin.
Oh, that's right.
So as soon as he came back, I said, that's it. I know what's going on. I want tickets. And God bless him, he came through with them.
The Celebration Day thing, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a really great... back in the day when you see Jason in the 80s, I never thought, you know, obviously he's John Bonham's son. You're like, he's a little bit of a ship off the old block. But when that Celebration Day, I think he finally came full circle and he really killed it, man.
Well, I think he was a very integral part of the whole thing because he knew the songs better than the band did. Of course, I listened to a fantastic interview with John Paul Jones.
Yeah.
Where he said, literally, if it hadn't been for Jason gluing it together, they probably would have got lost because he could just pull out when they were doing a song, you know, which way do you want to end it? The way you ended it in 75? The way you ended it in 77? He just had it all in his head, you know. He'd schooled on it.
He'd been watching from the outskirts, you know.
It's like, you know, there's nobody in Leopard that would remember remotely how we finished a song on a certain tour. We'd have to go on YouTube to see if there was any footage and watch it that way.
Yeah. I saw a blurb earlier this week where they said, drummers are smarter than everybody else. I don't know if you agree with that.
Drummers?
Yeah.
But they have to be. They're the timekeepers in the band, you know. Got to be clever to do that stuff.
They are the engine, that's for sure. Hey, Joe Elliott, man, I know you got a run. It's been a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
You too.
And we look forward to June 28th, Aaron's Amphitheater. It's a Sunday afternoon, plenty of tailgating going on. And
and ourselves and Tesla and Styx, it's going to be a mighty good night.
Yeah, Tesla to me always one of those bands from the 80s who could really play, you know.
Yeah, they were proper musicians.
Yeah.
Great, great, great guys. We toured them on the Asteria tour. They were and still are a fantastic band.
Joe, thanks for taking the time out, man.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, man. Take care. Bye-bye.